This is English John Black. No, I'm kidding. This is Punk News Podcast, episode 598. Let's roll. Listen, a lot's happening at the Punk News Podcast in the next couple of weeks, baby. I mean, a lot is happening. Actually, Hallie Bullet, is me blindly saying the word baby, is that sexist or is that funny because anybody can be baby?
Baby. Wait, why would baby be sexist? Aren't there boy babies and girl babies?
Well, there are. But
tell me if I'm missing something here with the concept of babies.
usually when you call... You can call a baby, of course, but somebody will be like, what's up, baby? Like you might say, hey, baby, or something, you know. Usually, a baby can be a term of endearment, but it can also be a term of to put somebody down. And however, in some cultures, a guy will call another guy baby as like a friend. You know what I mean? So maybe baby's cool in any context. I mean, I love calling people baby. I just think it's funny.
You know what I mean? I feel like, yeah, I think you can call people baby. As long as you're not, like, you know, out on the street catcalling women and calling them baby, I think you're good.
And listen, there you have it. Baby is here to stay. I love baby. I mean, in any context, you know, hey, baby, you know, keep it cool, baby, you know. The reason I brought this up is because I was watching a movie from the 70s, and it was a black exploitation film. And the male character was going around calling a male character – was going around calling other male characters baby and not even disrespectfully. Like, don't worry about it, baby. And I'd never really seen a man call another man baby seriously, you know? But it's just a different cultural thing. I love baby. I think it's great. So
I love it. Baby, I especially support you calling other men baby. I think that's fantastic.
Well,
expect a whole lot more of it because I saw that movie. I don't even know that, like, my dad was just watching some movie and it was some like B grade like black exploitation film or C grade, and the characters, you know, walking around in like bell bottoms and in like a, you know, big what do you call the big lapels. Just call me little baby. It was great. Anyways, this has nothing to do with anything. Here's what's happening in Punk News. A lot's happening in Punk News. First of all, maybe by the time you hear this, but probably not. But within the next week, we are going to have a bonus episode. That's me interviewing Flipper and Mike Watt, or at least Steve DePace of Flipper and Mike Watt. It's a really, really cool interview. We would have had it on the main thing, but it was two guys, and they could only do a certain time, so we did a bonus episode. And listen, people, Flipper is touring the UK as Steve DePace, Ted Falcone, and Mike Watt, and I am sure it is going to be absolutely the cool thing that I like. I mean, Flip, you know, most Bruce Luce is gone and Will Shatter is gone, so the only two people left in Flipper are Steve DePace and Ted Falcone, and so every tour is kind of different. With, you know, sometimes they have Yao of Jesus Lizard, and sometimes they have another lady in the band. And so people, like you could, and actually we're going to talk about this issue later on, you could say, well, it's just a skeleton. But for me, it doesn't feel like a skeleton band to me. It feels like kind of like a jazz quartet. Like Miles Davis, sometimes he plays with Cannonball Adderley. Sometimes he plays with John Coltrane. So I love that every time you see Flipper, it's like a different thing, and it's really, I guess the difference is that it's really good live. You know, and they're not saying, we're the original Flipper. They're saying, We're two guys from Flipper and Mike Watt, or we're two guys from Flipper and, you know, David Yao, you know, at any rate.
Well, and if you keep cycling in people that are great to watch perform, then that you know what I mean? I think that definitely adds to what you're saying, that you can just kind of, yeah, I think they can get away with it.
Indeed. And actually, I was like, they canceled their last tour, which was Steve DePace, Ted Falcone, and Fletcher Shears of The Garden on vocals, which I would have loved to see. But however, Flipper is going on tour, an East Coast tour, with The Garden, and I don't think any of the Garden Brothers are playing with them, but they might jump in for a song or two. But Mike Watt is playing that door. And actually, during the interview, and I'll shut up about this, I said, oh, man, so are you guys going to record with Watt? And then Steve DePace was like, that's a really good idea. And I'm like, you haven't thought of you know? And so I don't know if they were pulling my chain or not, but I would love to hear Watt with Flipper. That'd be real cool. Also, in the interview, Steve DePace was real cool, and Watt is more Watt than ever. And if you know what I'm talking about, he's Watt now. I mean, he's Watt times three. So, you know, I love Watt. So anyway, check that out. Also, Punk New Summer Soiree 5 in a little bit more than 2 weeks. Tickets are selling. I am so psyched. The bands are so psyched. July 2, Philadelphia, $12 in advance, $15 a door. If you come, you get a goodie bag, and I've got so much special stuff. But like, first, I mean, the bands are going to be killing. The Danger Mall, which is the Joe Jack Talcum Band, co-headlined with the Marissa Paternoster Band. They are both really psyched. Also, Vixen 77 is playing. They've got a new album coming out. Froggy's got a whole bunch of new stuff coming out. And At Night, which is the new band featuring Nicole of Witch Hunt. And they are real cool. And it is going to be an awesome show. But I've got so many weird and wacky surprises and weird things to happen during the show. It's going to be a banger, baby. I mean, this is going to be the one. I don't know if I'm going to do another show or not. I actually had a couple of people ask me to do another show afterwards, which I might do, but I probably won't, just because I need to be focusing elsewhere. But this show, John G is pulling out everything in the trick bag is getting pulled out of the show. So this is going to be the one, people. July 2, Philadelphia.
Nice. It's going to be such a good one.
And so let's get started. We got a lot to cover on this week's episode. We're going to kick it off. Is this past week, M. Moore did an awesome job curating and editing. Check out these cool new bands. Every year at Punk News, we do an article called Check Out These Cool New Bands. And it's not like the 10 best new bands of 2022. It's really just cool bands that we like, and M. Moore curated. And there's a bunch of cool new bands up there. M. Moore, tell us a little bit about this article, a little bit about some of the bands on there. And what do you think the direction of punk rock is in 2022?
I think the direction of punk rock in 2022 is really exciting. I think there's just like, there's so many awesome people making awesome music. And I know there are going to be lots more bands coming out this year. Like Crisis Party are going to be releasing stuff. Gross are going to be releasing stuff. Helianthus are going to be releasing stuff later on. They didn't have music yet, so that's why they're not on this list. But I'm really excited. I love listening to new music. I love finding new bands. And if you don't listen to new music, you're stuck in a rut and, you know, need a kick, and here it is, you know, check them out. Putting together the lists are always so cool, because it's so neat to see what everyone else is listening to and paying attention to. John, with the blurbs that you wrote, you focused a lot on like Philly bands, which is really cool, because, you know, it's neat to have a wide range, and it's neat to have people who are like kind of on the ground and know what's going on. So, and, you know, it's so good.
Me. I'm on the ground and I know what's going on. I definitely don't just see what other cooler people than me are posting and decide which ones I like the best. I'm on the ground and I know what's going on.
See, there you go.
But, you know, you are doing a lot of that legwork for, yeah. You know what I mean? You are doing that research and that legwork for your readers. So and you might, you're on the virtual ground. You're on the internet ground.
Yeah.
You're pounding the World Wide Web pavement, I would say, looking for new.
As I lamented, I was on the ground before COVID, and then COVID shut down one of my favorite clubs, and I don't get out to the cool new spot anymore. And also, well, it's interesting how much a booker can have an influence on a scene, only to the extent that, like, if a booker books a certain kind of band and not other kinds of bands, then you just don't see those kinds of bands, and that really does influence at least the local culture. And so I'm not on the ground as much as I used to be. don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. You definitely don't want to be kind of like the like actually Hallie wasn't on this episode. I did not go to that Froggy show, which was the Froggy prom, and I'm glad I didn't, as we said before, because everyone there was 17 or 18 and they were having 17 and 8-year old fun, and it would have been weird if I was there. So you don't want to be the weirdo at the 17 year old party, you know, like when Cousin Danny's was fully active, there was this dude that was like 55 that went to every punk show there, and actually I think he still does. And he gets like blitzed, you know, and he's like moshing, which in a way is cool, but on the other hand, it's like, well, when you're 55, I don't know if going to every punk show is the greatest virtue. Maybe it is. I don't know, but you know, like you don't want to you want to be dignified, is what I'm saying, I guess. Hallie, but you get what I'm saying?
I do, but I definitely do, and but like also I don't want it to be. Listen, as someone that's getting up there in age, I think maybe I'm like more sensitive to this, but I don't think it should just be creepy. Just the fact that you're an older human being shouldn't make it creepy that you're showing up to places. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a little unfair. Go ahead.
When I went to see Screaming Females at Swarthmore College, and I thought it was all ages, but it was actually Swarthmore students, I felt creepy as hell, Hallie. And I knew I wasn't being creepy, but I felt creepy, you know?
Yeah, but that's such an extreme situation. I'll just say, like, even when I was playing in The Unlovables and I was younger, there were definitely older, you know, especially dudes, who would show up to shows and, you know, like, some of them were creepy, but that's because they were behaving creepy. And that was because they were doing other things that were creepy that was separate from their age. Do you know what I mean? But, like, we had definitely had older dude fans who showed up and behaved themselves and were not creepy at all. And we were happy to have them there, you know? But I know what you're saying. The optics of it, it can be hard. It can definitely be hard. I think especially as a guy. As an older woman, I think you're more likely to just walk into the room and you're just invisible to everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, literally, people just don't even see you. You are, like, totally invisible. But I do think sometimes, yeah, as, like, an older man, sometimes people are on the lookout for creepers, and so they may just be, like, assuming that you're falling into that category. It's rough. It's rock and roll. It's not easy getting old in rock and roll, man.
There's a song title. There's a Joe Walsh song title if I ever heard one. It's not easy getting old in rock and roll. Or Jimmy Buffett did that too, you know. Maybe I'll do that thing with what's it, the actor? You know, he's got the skateboard behind his back and the backwards hat.
Hey,
hello, fellow. Yeah, hello, fellow young people. I'm here for the punk show.
Yes.
At any rate, Enmore did a great job on this, and I really should not bitch about this, but I'm going to. Is as always, we put out all these killer bands, and a lot of the bands here don't conform to the standard, you know, melodic pop punk, and people just don't care. It's like we've got so much cool and new and fresh stuff, and the people just they're fighting so hard against new stuff. I feel like. I'm not sure why. Actually, I am sure why, but go ahead, Em. What were you going to say?
Because they're dicks. So, like, there's so many just awesome bands. If you like garage rock, if you like garage punk, if you like folk punk, if you like ska, if you like hardcore punk, like, we have something for everyone on this. Like, there's Tits Up, there's Mesh, Hustler, Lucia, ALO's Alfiers, Fail Together, Book Buddies, Stress Position, Sham Family, Jive Bomb, like La Securite, Poison Ruin. There's so many awesome bands. I left some out on purpose because you have to go check it out, listener. You got to read it and interact with it and check these bands out. It's so frustrating because it's like all of the bands on the list are amazing, like, you know, and doing really cool stuff. And we try, like, on Punk News, too, we do highlight bands, like, in news stories and stuff who are new and who are upcoming and all this kind of stuff. And it's the exact same thing. People don't give them a chance because people are so rooted, I guess, in what they like. And if they, you know, check out anything that isn't, how was it, like, that you phrased it, for white guys singing about whiskey and friendship.
Friendship and whiskey, yeah.
Yeah. Then, you know, they're going to burst into flames.
But there was even a bit of that on this list, which is which is not a criticism. That's to say, I think you're exactly right. And there is, I really do feel like there's something for everybody on this list. I thought the list was awesome. And there's definitely some white guys, just like there was one that like literally the first line was like, oh, my buddy passed me a beer. And I started laughing because I was remembering this conversation that we had had, like whatever that was. I think it was last week. You know, that's it's like its own genre of punk.
Some beer bands are good.
Can I say what were my favorite? Does anyone care?
Yeah.
I loved Mesh. I loved Belly Jelly. So John, thank you for those. And I loved Book Buddies and Jive Bomb, which is not, I think, probably a band that you guys, right? It's a little harder probably than some of the stuff that I listened to or that you would expect me to like, but I did like that a lot. And man, La Securité, I thought that was so good. Like so good. And I really liked right. They put out it's like a single with a B side? Is that it? Or is it just the two?
It's two singles.
It's just two singles. Yeah. I just thought the two singles, they had both kind of like a new wave vibe a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But like really different sides of like the different ends of the spectrum of new wave. And so I really am excited to hear more from that band. I just thought this was legitimately awesome, you guys. So thank you. Do it every week, but thank you for yet again feeding me like more great new music. And I agree. I think if you're not listening to new music, there's just a part of your brain you're not using. just use that part of your brain. It's like exciting, and I don't know. Like it really just. I mean, music doesn't mean. I think music matters to everyone. Obviously, some people it matters more to, but for me, it is like not listening to new music is like a little bit of like a small death of sorts, you know? Yeah. And I've gone through years where I just didn't have the time or was burnt out on music and didn't have the interest, but it feeds you in a way that other stuff doesn't, right?
Yeah. I agree 100%. I think it's healthy intellectually or mentally to do new puzzles, listen to new music, you know. I gotta say, I was worried about becoming kind of an old fart, but man, I'm as excited about music as I ever have been. You know what I mean?
Me too, so, John. Yeah. And totally. And I'm like, oh, I'm not, yes, it is a little reassuring to be like, oh, I'm not just like an old fuddy-duddy that has to go back and listen to things that were released when I was younger because I can't relate to anything new. It's like I relate to so much of it. We talk about it a lot. I just think music, the music scene is so vibrant right now. It's an exciting time to be a listener, you know?
Yeah.
But on the flip side, I walk in there, oh boy, I can't wait to see Froggy. Oh, everyone here is 14. So anyway, it's always a trade-off, baby.
Yes.
And we're going to go from the posse to the neggy. This is... The Cro-Mags are back at it again.
What was the noise?
That's me blowing air in exhaustion and annoyance. And
like as if you run a marathon of having to listen to bullshit about the Cro-Mags. Yes.
So as everyone knows, the Cro-Mags, the three main Cro-Mags, John Joseph, Harley Flanagan, and Paris Mayhew, have been at each other's throats since 1986, nonstop. And for literally 35 years, they had been fighting for the rights to the name Cro-Mags. At various times, each member claimed rights to the names. At one time, John said he owned Cro-Mags, and Harley said he owned Cro-Mags, and even Paris said he owned Cro-Mags. And at one point, there was literally three different Cro-Mags in existence for a brief period of time. Finally, about 2 years ago, Harley sued John and won the rights to the name Cro-Mags. And under the settlement, and we know this is the result of the settlement because both Harley and John did public statements, which fit in with each other, that Harley got the rights to the name Cro-Mags, and he licensed John Joseph the right to tour and maybe even record as Cro-Mags JM. It's important to point that prior to the settlement, John Joseph sometimes did play as Cro-Mags JM, and sometimes he even played as Cro-Mags JAM, and people would say Cro-Mags Jam. which stood for Cro-Mags John and Mackie, John Joseph and Mackie Jason, original Cro-Mags drummer. And so it appeared that it was cool, and honestly, it wasn't even – like John Joseph said he was going to do Cro-Mags JM stuff, but then he did some Blood Clot stuff, which is his other band. And so it appeared that it had been all wrapped up, and finally after 35 years of combat, the battle was over. Everyone wasn't happy, but they could live with the results of the settlement, which any attorney knows anytime you – when you sue somebody, you go to what's called a mediation. And a mediation is where a third party, could be a judge, could just be some guy, tries to settle the case for the two parties. And what they usually say is, no one's going to walk out happy. The question is, can you walk out with something that you can live with? And it seemed that they both, 2 years ago, had worked out something that they could live with. Harley gets the name Cro-Mags. John Joseph is Cro-Mags JM. Seems like an okay result for everybody. Well, guess what? They're back at it again. I mean, pretty much the week after the summit, they were already taking vague snaps and snips at each other in the social media. Harley has sued John Joseph again. The reason Harley has sued John Joseph this time was because in April 2022, John Joseph played one of those Black and Blue festivals up in Tompkins Square Park, which – actually, we talked about something. Remember – I guess it was a year ago, they did one of this Black and Blue Fest we reported on it, and John Joseph sent me an email, you know,
yeah.
and we posted
it. Oh, yeah.
You know. So anyways, this is the April 20th. So anyway, the point is the Black and Blue Fest have a lot of things that I think is kind of sketchy, or maybe sketchy not the right word, but unsavory and not well thought out. And I feel as though a lot of the core values, which appear to be espoused by the Black and Blue Fest, are in direct contrast with punk rock. But if you feel that way, maybe you do, maybe you don't. I'm not going to fight with you over it. I don't really care. I'm just saying, I think they do a lot of stuff that I think is not cool. And so anyways, the point being is Harley sued John Joseph, and Harley said that in the April 2022 show, John Joseph advertised the show as Cro-Mags Jam, J-A-M, not Cro-Mags J-M. And Harley says that is in violation of the settlement agreement, and therefore the remedy that I want from the court is to completely bar John Joseph from using the name Cro-Mags JM or Cro-Mags in any fashion whatsoever. I've got some very strong feelings on this, and I'll kick it off. We have to look at two things, first of all. We have to look at, does John Joseph playing as Cro-Mags JAM as opposed to – well, first of all, I looked at the flyer, and the flyer clearly said Cro-Mags JM. But maybe John Joseph posed it as Cro-Mags JAM somewhere else. So the first thing that needs to be proven is, did John Joseph advertise the show as Cro-Mags JAM? I didn't see that anywhere, but maybe he did. I just didn't see it, but maybe he did. So let's say he did. So then we have to look at two things. First of all, we have to say, does that violate materially the settlement agreement? And in most cases you would say no, that doesn't violate the settlement. But in this case, where the right to names are so bolted down and so minute and so specific, maybe it does violate the settlement agreement. In which case, if it does, then we have to look at, is it trademark infringement? The question would be, and so when we do trademark infringement, we ask the jury or the judge, the fact finder, one thing and one thing only, really, with regards to consumer confusion as opposed to dilution, which is a different thing. Consumer confusion. We say, would the average consumer for this type of product or service is likely to be confused by this trademark source of origin? So, for example, if I have a soup and I sell it as Camp Wells, that's going to be trademark infringement, because the average consumer that buys soup might think that's Campbell soup, right?
Right.
But by contrast, so here's where it gets real tricky. If you Hallie, pick any band that's not the Cro-Mags. Pick any band.
NoFX.
Okay. If I tweeted NoFX, J-A-H, NoFX Ja, John and Haley, that's definitely trademark infringement, because you can't just take a band's name and put a little bit extra next to it. That is definitely trademark infringement. But here they've got a settlement.
Damn.
Yes. Yeah. No effects.
Damn, John. Now we have to go back to the drawing board with our plan.
Here it gets confusing. This is difficult to parse, because they have agreed that John Joseph can be Cro-Mags JM, So would your average consumer for this type of service be confused that Cro-Mag's J.A.M. is not John Joseph and might be Harley Flanagan? That's a real difficult question. That's a real difficult thing to parse out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, as we said before, is that a material breach of the settlement agreement? You know, like if you settle with a company, like let's say a company said, we'll pay you $5,000 a month for 12 months on the first of the month, and 1 month they pay you on the third of the month. Can you void that settlement agreement? No, because it's not a material breach. You know. But is this a material breach? I really don't know. But so there's the legal aspect. From the strategy standpoint, and I like Harley, and I'm Team Harley, and I think Harley's great. And I just saw Cro-Mag with Harley like 3 weeks ago, and they sounded real good. And Harley's recent Cro-Mag albums have been fantastic. If Harley is just fighting just to fight like the Cro-Mags have done in the long – forever, it's like, Harley, this is, why? The battle's over. You know, like every, but the battle's over. You just send him a letter that says, "Don't be JM. We know you're JM. Stop using JAM." You know, it's over. It's settled. The dust is cleared. Why dust it back up? You're just looking for a fight. However, and I certainly have no idea. Maybe there's a greater strategy to this. Maybe, just maybe, Harley wanted the total rights to the Cro-Mags trademark all along, and maybe he suspected that if he gave he said, well, I'll be able to settle it if I give John Joseph Cro-Mag's JM. And then in the back of his mind, maybe he's thinking, but I know he's going to screw up just because that's how we fight. You know, we love picking at each other. So I know he's going to screw up and not build like he's supposed to. So if it's just Harley looking to dust it up, I would say, Harley, come on, man. But if this is part of some master plan for Harley to get the total trademark rights because he believed that John Joseph would screw it up, then I say that's a pretty good strategy. And you would say, there's no way Harley has that kind of strategy. But I disagree because I didn't think Harley would be able to get the rights to Cro-Mags back from John Joseph. And he did by following the Misfits lawsuit as a model,
yeah,
between Danzig and Jerry Only. So maybe it is part of a huge plan. And if it is, that's pretty good. That's a master plan. I don't know. But it's this battle just will not end, Hallie. It will not end this battle. It won't end.
So silly and petty. Aren't you so glad you're not the judge that has to like take this shit seriously and like actually? I mean, I would just be like, oh god, I'm having to mediate this like argument between these two old crotchety hardcore guys. Like so silly. I mean. It's like, it's funny. It's like that saying of like, you had one job or like you had one thing to do. Like all that John Joseph had to do was just call it Cro-Mag's JM. That's like the only fucking thing he had to do. I think you're right. I think this is the way they fight. This is the way that they fuck with each other. And as for the, like, I guess like Harley like made a statement that was like, he was worried that people were going to think that this means that it's the Cro-Mags doing like a jam session. Can you imagine anything more unlikely? Like Cro-Mags are just gonna like be like the like fish and they're just gonna do like a jam set and that's like what people think they're buying tickets to. Just the whole thing is so silly. It's very entertaining in a way, but also sad, you know? Like also
are you ready to have your mind absolutely blown away?
Yeah.
The Cro-Mags used to do jam sets.
Did
on
they?
The Alpha during the Alpha Omega tour, when Cro-Mag rats were absolute lowest and things were just totally falling apart, some guy with a flute would come on stage and Cro-Mag would jam for 25 minutes with this guy with a flute. I am not kidding you.
Oh my god. All right. Well, then I take it all back. I think you're right. This is how they need to fight with one another. There's so much bad blood and they're just not going to stop sniping at each other. And now this is how they do it. You know,
just let it go, boys. Just
let
it
go, boys.
Emma, can you solve this for us?
First I want to hear Cro-Mag's flute music. Cause I think that'd be hilarious.
No, you don't.
That's like, don't look down the rabbit hole. Just step away. I, I think 100%, like, they're just doing this to get at each other. Like, even the part and, like, the statement where it was, the New York Post editor used to have a crush on my wife, you know, like, all this kind of stuff. Like, it all just seems really, like, petty.
Oh, that quote was amazing. Right? And then he's like, sorry, buddy, fuck you and your rag of a paper, which he's correct. New York Post can suck it. But yeah, that was like a really funny end to the statement. Yeah.
That was awesome. And then I read the comments, and my favorite comment, I think it's Ricky's comment, is, can't we all just hug it out? Yeah. It's like, just put them all in a room, and it's like, it's locked. Figure it out so you can leave.
They should all be in a jam band together.
Yeah.
That's a great, right? Get the old crew back together and just jam it out. Just, you know?
Yes.
I will say, just musically speaking, and I'm not trying to pat anybody on the back too much, but Harley's recent Cro-Mag stuff and the recent Harley solo stuff has been so, like, I don't even want a reunion. Like, I just want Harley to just get out there and kick ass like he's doing and forget all the bullshit, because he's got it. I mean, from my perspective, he's got it all. The new records are extremely good. They sound extremely good live. Just get out there and kick ass. You know, I don't think you're, well, unless there's some big plan, like I mentioned, I don't think you're helping your legacy or even your bank account by doing this, you know, but maybe I'm wrong. You know, I like Harley. I just don't know if this is the best move for him or not. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, this is blind speculation, and that's what we do on this show. And listen, let's talk about something that's not blind speculation. Let's talk about something that's concrete and more. Tell us about Try the Pie. How's the pie? Okay.
The pie is amazing. The pie will knock your socks off. So, yeah, Try the Pie is led by Bean Tupu. And they're a non-binary artist, and they're awesome. And the rest of the band is Nick Lopez of Ugly Winter, Bailey Lupo of Scowl, and Lane Barriga of Oka Sun. So that's the band for this album. And the album is called A Widening Burst of Forever. And they just released their final single for it, which is called Three Swords. And this band is so cool. It's just, I don't even know, like, you know, when you listen to something and it just, like, it just clicks, and it's just like, that's exactly what I needed to hear. And that, you know, like, I didn't know that I had a void that needed to be filled, kind of thing. Like, that's what Try the Pie does. For me, anyway, like, the previous two singles are really good, especially New Dust. And then this single, Three Swords, it's a slower tempo. There's fuzzy guitars. There's it's kind of indie. There's a bit of everything. And I love Bean's, like, lyrics and, like, their voice. And there's so much harmony and melody in it. And, like, their voice is so emotive. And it's just, like, it's just so good, you know? Like, every time you listen to it, you hear something new, or maybe you don't hear something new, but, like, you picture something new, and I'm really, really looking forward to this album. Did you guys check it out, the song?
I did. I mean, I think maybe I need to listen to it again, because I like slow music. I like indie music. Like, nothing like grabbed me, but I'll listen to it again. John, did you like it?
I did like it. It actually reminded me of, like, stuff that was really popular in Pitchfork in, like, 2010, 2011, 2012, kind of like the Beach House, late Vivian Girls era, No Joy. I'm trying to think of that band that was, like, really kind of like, which one, Gossamer, kind of like this. I dug it. I thought it was cool. I wasn't blown away by it, but I did. I liked the big, broad, kind of soaring sounds. And I thought it was cool. That pie is all right. listen, here's something that is perhaps a bit more divisive. The Dead Boys are going on tour. We say, John, isn't Steve Bader's dead? The answer is yes, he is. So who are the Dead Boys in 2022? The Dead Boys in 2022 is Cheetah Chrome and, like, three or four other dudes. They will be touring with The Briefs and Susie Moon. The tour starts in October and runs through most of November. They're covering almost all the United States. I will be at the Philly show. But the question, the couple of questions here. Halle Blitt, A, are you a Dead Boys fan? B, do you care about the Dead Boys 2022 as in Cheetah Chrome? C, should it just be called Cheetah Chrome and Pals? And D, would you go just to see the Breeze, who tour very rarely, and Susie Moon, who is kind of is not necessarily a new artist because she's been a whole bunch of bands, but there does feel like there's steam behind her new band, the Susie Moon Band.
Yeah, I mean, I am a Dead Boys fan. Not big enough that I ever made the effort to see any of these guys. Although I feel like Cheetah Chrome must have played the Continental back when I worked there. That's very long ago. But I feel like I had to have seen him play. But that's because I worked there, you know. I don't know. I would probably go to this just to see the Briefs. I mean, I got an alert, you know, that this show was happening, that the Briefs were playing in Brooklyn. And I was like, holy shit. Like, that's pretty cool. Susie Moon, I could like take it or leave it, but yeah, I don't know. Well, you tell me if I went to see Cheetah Chrome play with these guys as the Dead Boys, if I've never seen the Dead Boys, is that like, do you know what I'm not knowing how to articulate my question, but like, would it be better to not see it at all, or do you think this would be worth seeing?
Great question, and I think it really depends on how much of a fan of the Dead Boys. Like, I like the Dead Boys a lot, but I'm not like, people are Dead Boys maniacs. If you ask me, they've got one great album. They've got one great album and one not so good album. And honestly, as great as the great album is, all the songs are kind of exactly the same. And by track 7, I'm like, yes, it's good, but it's real good. But I've heard it 7 times already, you know. But I'm not just, I think the Dead Boys are great. But the point being, like Hallie actually asked me a little while ago, should I go see the Dead Kennedys? I'm like, no, you know. And then I write down, well, maybe Hallie might, like, I don't want to see the Dead Kennedys without Jello. To me, but that's a little bit different too, though, because the Dead Kennedys are touring without Jello against Jello's wishes, where here the Dead Boys are mostly dead, you know. But what I would say is, it depends on how much you care about the Dead Boys. But all like I like the Dead Boys, but if I went, so I'm not gonna go expecting the Dead Boys. Like, I'm going to see Cheetah Chrome, and that's fine. Like, I actually don't mind when any member of a band says I'm gonna go play a bunch of my old band's music, because like Peter Hook does Joy Division and New Order. I love that. Like, I know it's not Joy Division, you know, I know it's not New Order, it's Peter Hook, but it's still awesome. It's the guy that wrote some of the music playing the music live. Or best example, Steve Vigner does Crass, which is amazing, which some people hate, but it's like, no, yeah, I know it's not Crass, Jackass. Their big thing was they broke up in 1984. I know it's Steve Vigner, but he's the guy that wrote a lot of these songs and sang those, so I want to get a chance to see that in any aspect, you know. But So going to see Cheetah Chrome doing this would be cool. But here's the one thing is, if you go see it and the rest of the band is kind of acting like they are the Dead Boys and the singer is kind of like aping Steve Bader's unique stage presence, that could be a bummer. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. It's so, just like, is it not going to be good, and it would be better to just leave my image of like what a Dead Boys show live would be like, just leave that dream in my head intact, you know?
We talked about this earlier, like the Flipper comparison is really cool, because Flipper, like, yeah, I'm not seeing Flipper 1982. I know it's just Steve DePace and Ted Falcone with Mike Watt. And, you know, you're seeing, quote, Flipper, but it's really Steve DePace, Mike Watt, and Ted Falcone doing something that they do uniquely. Like, yeah. Mike Watt isn't going to be doing Bruce Luce. He's doing Mike Watt, you know, that's kind of the difference.
Yeah. And like, who wouldn't want to see those guys on stage doing whatever it is they're going to do together? You know what I mean? Whatever that's going to sound like, or whatever that show is going to be, it's going to be interesting, right? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyhow, yeah. And that was a very long answer to, yes, I would just go to see the Briefs.
My answer is I would go to see the Briefs and Susie Moon. I like both those bands and more. How about you?
I would go to see the Briefs and I would go to see Susie Moon. And I don't think I like the Dead Boys, but it's the same thing. I wouldn't see Dead Kennedys without Jello. I think this is kind of the ship that sailed. And I think it's really funny that they called it the reanimated tour.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hallie Bullet, do you know, are you on in the background the famous Live at the Continental CD at all?
Like hooping and hollering? I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I never thought about it.
There's a really cool CD called Live at the Continent. It's kind of a weird, like, I don't know who put it out. It's called Live at the Continental Best of NYC. And it's a bunch of, like, kind of first and second wave punk bands doing live stuff. It's got the Harley Cro-Mags doing Street Justice. It's got Joey Ramone doing I Want to Be Sedated with the Joey Ramone Band, which is pretty cool. It's got The Remains, which is Marky and Dee Dee. But one of the more interesting things here is it's got Cheetah Chrome doing Sonic Reducer on vocals, Handsome Dick Manitoba. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, totally cool. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I was there a lot, you know, and it wasn't in the club's heyday, but it was pretty close to it, you know? Yeah, maybe I was there for some of those.
How did you ever get to see the Joey Ramone Band?
Yeah.
How was it?
Pretty good. I don't know. It's just exciting to see him. But mostly he was around the Continental as like the manager of the Remains, or like that that woman he was dating. What was her name? I can't remember her band. He was around more as like the club as like a manager. But yeah, anytime.
You don't mean Dee Dee and Barbara Zamponi or whatever her name was, do you?
No.
Oh. Oh, I didn't know that Joey was famous for dating a particular woman, frankly.
I don't even know if he was famous for it, but there was like a woman that he like hung around with, and he was like managing her band for a bit. I don't remember what they were called.
I sort of vaguely know that like they were kind of like an it band, but they never like broke through. I think I know. Anyways, doesn't matter.
I don't feel like they were an it band at all. I think the only reason anyone paid attention to them was because they were just like in that scene and friends with everybody, and musically they were fine. They weren't like anything that exciting.
Well, there you have it. Let's play a song. Should we play Try the Pie?
Let's play Try the Pie.
All right, people, try some of this pie, and we'll be back.
Yeah.
And we are back. And I talk about this band all the time, and I'm going to try to stop talking about them as much, but I don't care because they're so good. And, you know, we talked about, you know, new bands and Whiskey and Friendship. This band is everything I want out of a modern punk band. They're just, if you ask me, John, what kind of band you want in 2022? This is the band I want. Surfport. They released a video for Cheap Glue. The video is just kind of them hanging out in Manhattan, maybe in Times Square. Hallie, you can confirm or deny that they're actually
definitely in Times Square. Yeah.
In Times Square. Yeah. And they're just kind of like hanging. So the video itself isn't that great. It's all right. It's fine. But the song I just think is killer. It's off the release album Keep On Truckin', which produced by Linda Perry. And you can kind of tell that this track, their last album, I just think this track, Cheap Glue, it's the song that closes the album, but the lyrics are so much Danny Miller. She's like, take a walk on the beach and let's talk about emotions, which is like totally like a Danny Miller type lyric. Take a walk by the ocean and talk about emotion, which is just a total Danny Miller type lyric. And I just refer to, like, let's talk about emotion, not like, you know, any one specific emotion, just emotion in general. So anyway, I just think Surfport is so freaking good. I can't wait to see them live again. And I just think the new album, I feel like the new album release was kind of bungled. I think it was released as part of kind of like some SoundCloud thing. And that's why I didn't get a wider release. I really feel like if they had, in my interview, I talked about it with this, is that they were having management issues. So maybe that was part of it too. I feel like the second album could have, it had gotten a bigger push, this album would have been gigantic. That being said, maybe that doesn't matter. The band is awesome. It seems like they're having fun. They're on tour. I think this track is awesome. And more. Did you love Cheap Glue or really love Cheap Glue?
I really love Cheap Glue. It's one of my favorite songs off of the album. And the video, the video is good. It's just, I like all their videos because they're hanging out and they're having fun and it doesn't matter what they're doing. They look like they're just having the best time together and having the best time wherever they are, you know, like they're hanging out with like random people in Times Square. Their Times Square Elmo makes an appearance. Like they're dropping banana peels and slipping on them. Like it's great. I'm a big Surfport fan and I'm all for Surfport supremacy. Hallie, what did you think of Cheap Glue?
You guys, I'm a little sick. Is that why I just like didn't love anything I listened to? Like I love Surfport. This wasn't my favorite Surfport song. And yeah, I didn't love the video, but you know, they've done so many great videos and they're all funny and clever. And like, I also was like, I can accept you just doing a video where you just hang out. Like I'm not expecting like literally every single song you put out to have like a great, like produced, like semi like budget, you know, with celebrity cameos and like I don't need that from every video. But yeah, it was fine. It wasn't my favorite Surfport song.
Off the podcast. Out of here. Here is someone that is an influence on Danny Miller. Blondie is going to release a box set of all their classic albums, including The Hunter, which is often forgot about as the end of the original Blondie run. It's called Against the Odds, 1974 to 1982, and it's a pretty massive box set. It's 8 CDs or 3 CDs, and vinyl, I think there's a 4 LP vinyl set, but I think there's actually like a 12 LP vinyl set as well. It's all the albums from the first one, which I think is just called Blondie, isn't it, through the Hunter album, which is their last one of the original run. Also, it comes with a ton of bonus tracks. A lot of these bonus tracks were already re-released in the early 2000s, Blondie remasters. On top of that, there's some demos and it looks like something called a private stock single. So basically, some demos that I don't know if they're really that worthwhile in of themselves. And at first, I was a hater. I'm like, we've already got the Blondie remasters. We don't need this. This is just gouging because the Blondie remasters are really well done. They've got great booklets and they sound great and the bonus tracks are worthwhile. So this is kind of just those put together a little bit more. But on the other hand, I looked at the price. The price of the 8 CD version is only like $100 or something. And I thought, well, you know what, John? Maybe not everybody has the Blondie remaster CDs. You've got them, but maybe not everyone else has them. And so if you don't have the Blondie set, man, $100 for every single thing Blondie released during the original run, pretty rad. So I'm giving this one. I don't know if you would need to buy the Super Deluxe Vinyl Edition. I think you might want to invest that money just buying the originals, which really still aren't that expensive. But that being said, I think it's a really nice, well done set. Blondie gets a lot of credit, but maybe they don't get enough credit for being as good as they are. Like, all the original Blondie albums, maybe except for The Hunter, are like pretty great all the way through. And Parallel Lines in Auto American, even in E to the B, are just bulletproof from start to end. And also, I just thought about this now, is maybe, Debbie Harry is often spoken about for being glamorous, but maybe Debbie Harry is like the first glamorous woman to be in punk rock. If we look at punk rock, a lot of people like Alice Bag or even Penelope Houston of the Avengers, or Frank, their thing is like, well, we were bucking against gender norms. But maybe it's interesting that Debbie Harry totally embraced gender norms and used those to her advantage and her benefit, which I think both paths are valid paths. Along those lines, if we look at bands now like Scow, Cat Moss of Scow, amazing singer, she's got kind of a Debbie Harry thing going on. So maybe Debbie Harry should get credit. Maybe Debbie Harry doesn't get enough credit for that, and maybe she should. One thing that I do love is if you read the Blondie remastered booklets, all the producers are like, Debbie Harry was really difficult to work with. And usually when they say, but at the end result, it was worth it because look at the magic we made. But in all the Blondie remaster CDs, they say Debbie Harry is really difficult to work with, period. I love Debbie Harry. I think she, you know, it's kind of the Joan Jett thing is maybe she had to be tough to do what she wanted to do. You know, because, I mean, in the 70s were definitely the era where the producer was like, listen here, baby, you know, we're going to record the way I do because I know what I'm doing, and you're just a little blonde girl, and you don't know what you're doing, but I know. So maybe she had to be that tough. And you know, anyways, Hallie Bullitt, what's your stance?
I mean, she definitely had a toughness. That's why I would a little bit – I mostly get what you were saying, but I would a little bit challenge the gender norms thing because I always got the sense – again, it's just like, you know, it's just my personal perspective as a fan looking at her. Like, you know, she was into fashion and she was into looking beautiful, but she always exuded this toughness for sure. And it there was something for me as a fan where I was interpreting that of like, she dresses this way for her. It's not for you. She's wearing this shit because she likes it and it makes her feel good. It's not for you. She doesn't give a shit about what you think of her. You know, there was like some grit that was, I think, coming through in a way that was unusual for a pop star. And I think it's why we talk about them on a punk podcast. Do you know what I mean? Because a lot of those songs they're just really poppy, you know, but there was something in the attitude that was punk. And so in that way, I think I do think she was challenging some gender norms there. And yeah, I mean, this is super comprehensive. This is like a great collection. And I think you're right. I think if someone's a big Blondie fan, it already has a lot of, you know, the remasters and stuff, then maybe they don't need this. But how much are the vinyl sets going for, John? Do you know?
I will look it up now while you all discuss.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this is pretty cool. And I don't know. It just, I even just reading through the track list, it was like reminding me how much, what, how
know,
much,
what's going
much.
On.
466 smackaroonies.
Yeah.
What?
I was imagining that it was really expensive. Yeah. But I don't know. It's just like, I was just reading through the track list and remembering how many of the songs that like aren't their hits are just still so good. I actually ended up down a rabbit hole looking for the original version of Sunday Girl, the vinyl that had like, it had like Sunday Girl in English on the A side and then Sunday Girl in French on the B side with like another side. I don't remember what the other song, but I don't know. And some of the more obscure tracks are like some of their best songs. If someone wants to spend that much money on this, I get it, you know. Are you gonna spend how much is that in Canadian dollars?
Oh no, too much. Way too much. The CDs are pretty decent though, I think, for price, so like that's always a bonus. Yeah. But yeah, like this is really cool. There's a lot. going on. Like, Hallie, I did the same thing, like, going through the track list. Just like, oh, my God, that's such a good song. I haven't listened to it in so long. This song kicks ass, you know, and, like, all this kind of stuff. And it just kind of reminded me, like, how much, you know, I really like Blondie. Yeah. And, yeah, it was the same thing, too. Like, seeing Debbie Harry, like, she just had I guess she still has the, like, just kind of a power about her, you know, that's, you know, yeah, exactly what you said, just like, fuck you, this is me, this is what I'm doing, so, you know.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. There you have it. Blondie's getting in a bunch of...
Oh, you're cutting out a little bit, Sean.
Yeah. What's going on?
No.
Oh, no. Oh, there we go.
Are you there, John?
Yeah,
you're coming in.
And okay. I'm here. So anyway, Eddie and the Subtitles are re-releasing their first of two LPs, Skeletons in the Closet. Of course, Eddie and the Subtitles had the single before that. American Society. As the listeners probably know, Eddie and the Subtitles are mostly known because they had that compilation CD that had, like, the compilation CD was kind of weird. Because it like put together like some of the single and some of the first LP and some of the second LP, and it was weird because they could have easily put all the entire discography on one CD, and for some reason they just didn't, which was bizarre. But that being said, I am super excited to see that this is coming out, because Skeletons in the Closet hasn't ever been repressed since the original issue. And if you want to buy an original one, it's like $200 right now or something like that. Actually, believe it or not, it literally just dropped in price from $300 to $125 due to this reissue, which is great. But also, going to get a reissue. Any of the Subtitles, for me, they're not quite up there with like Black Flag and German Circle Jerks, but they're just half a step down. And that it's like, if I had to pick one area that was my favorite era of punk rock, it's that early LA punk scene right before hardcore, when every band was wild and freaky and cracked out on drugs and totally toxic, and all the band members are ripping each other off, and they made just wonderfully edged, barbed, destructive music. An interesting thing about Eddie is, Eddie is long since passed away. In the compilation CD, if you read about Eddie, like, everyone's talking about Eddie, apparently he was like just some super rich kid, and his parents just like paid for everything. And so I think like
John
is and maybe it's the compilation. Can you hear me?
Yeah, really cutting out a lot.
Okay, well, I'll try to hang in there. The thing with Eddie and the Subtitles is that it's he was a rich kid, and his parents like paid for all these recordings, and like everyone would mooch off him, and basically he would pay people to be friends with him, which is kind of sad, but in the context of art, it's this wild punk aesthetic. At any rate, Hallie Bullitt, Eddie and the Subtitles, what's your take?
I it was interesting. Like, I didn't know this band. There was like the first track I was super into, and then some of it was like, some of the rest of it I was like, oh yeah, this is like an LA kind of sound that I'm not super into. Right? Weren't they from LA? Sorry, you probably just said that.
Yes.
But you were cutting in and out.
My bad.
Like, it had a little bit of an LA vibe that wasn't, that's not always totally my thing. I did love, I did love on their Wikipedia, there's like the cutest bit of history that I guess like all of the members of the band were assembled, but they didn't have a singer yet. And one of them worked at a movie theater and just started asking everyone that walked into the movie theater if they wanted to sing in a punk band. It's like so great, and that is actually how they found their singers, like, so sweet. I don't know. Or maybe I'm thinking of another band we were talking about today. I'm totally thinking of another band we were going to talk about today. Okay, sorry, never mind. I don't know. I don't have anything to say about this. Sorry, I'm like sick and tired.
Mike Patton was in it.
No, but not that Mike Patton. It's Mike Patton of middle class, who is different than Mike Patton of Mr. Bungle. Two different Mike Pattons.
Because I read it and I was like, what? Sorry.
Really, they come from like the same area, you know, FYI. So there's Mike Patton of middle class and Mike Patton of Mr. Bungle. So anyways, let's wrap this one up. So there's this band. Apparently, Alvin Paul is back and is posting articles about Cigar for some reason. Cigar has signed with Fat Records. They put out a new single called We Used To. That's off the album The Visitor out September 2022. It seemed like the Punk News listeners were extremely excited. The Punk News commenters were extremely excited about this. As far as I can tell, Cigar has only ever put out one other album, Speed is Relative, in 1999 on Theologian, which is kind of weird that now they're putting out a brand new album. I thought this was fine, but not my cup of tea at all. And more. Did you love Cigar? Yes.
I had not heard of Cigar until this was posted. And I listened to it for the podcast, and it was pretty underwhelmed. Because, I don't know, like, you know when you see certain band names and you kind of have like a, oh, this is their band name, this is kind of what they're going to sound like, and then you listen to them, and they're not even close. that was this band. They're not bad. Like, you know, people seem to like them. Again, it's just not what I want to hear right now at this point in my life, because it's all like, it's nostalgic and it's like, yep, we used to do this, and the song's literally called We Used To, you know, and it's, you know, we used to do this and that and the other thing. I did like the video. I thought the video was kind of fun. They're like a moving company, and they steal, or I guess they don't steal, they're moving band equipment. So they're playing in the back of the van, and then it like zooms out and there's like a little Hot Wheels van going across a map and all that kind of stuff. And at the end, the guy who they were moving for gives his kid the little van, you know, so that was nice. I liked that. That was fun. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of the song. Won't be listening to it again. Found it extremely repetitive and could have been much shorter. But the interview from 2003 was really cool. I read that. That was neat.
That is funny that that's on the site.
It's so cool. Like, that's the thing I always find, like, doing podcast notes and stuff is, like, go through, like, a small, like, Punk News wormhole, and it's like, oh, here's before, you know, I was, like, using the internet, and it's like, oh, there's so much stuff. Like, it's so, so cool. So that was really neat. Hallie, what did you think of Cigar?
Hi, I'm here. I've splashed cold water on my face. I won't say irrelevant facts about bands that we're not talking about. This is actually the band that found their singer at the movie theater.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly what you expect from like a band on Fat that's been around since 96. Like, that's what it sounds like. It actually, you know, I liked that stuff back in the day. And, you know, I'm not going to say like I loved this. I did think for that, like if that era and that type of punk is your jam, you're going to be so pleased with this. It is exactly that. It's hooky. It's like really fast. I don't know. I was sort of impressed. I was like, oh, wow, people can still like write. People still want to write a song like this. But I don't know. I thought it was pretty good. I liked the video. I'm with you, Em. I thought the video was clever. And yeah, it's just, it's interesting. Like, do people have who's listening to this? Is this people that liked this kind of stuff back in the day and they've never moved on? Or are people now, like, are younger people sort of in a nostalgic way getting into, I know, 90s are in now, like, fashion wise. So I'm just curious to know, like, who's the audience for this? You know, probably, you know, a mix of both of those things. But I mean, good for this band for 25 years later finally getting signed to the label they probably should have been on back in the 90s. You know, they really played the long game on this one.
People still write songs like one of Hallie's funniest outlines ever, I'd say. Listen, if you like it, I'm happy for you.
So condescending. I love it.
I'm at that crux. It's like, well, I don't like the band, but I don't dislike them as people. So, you know, but on the other hand, people want honest opinions, you know. But on the other hand, I've been banging the same drum for so long, eventually the drum gets worn out, you know. Like, how many times can I say people should be listening to Surfboard and Scow and Lotion and not the same old thing they've been listening to since 1995? But the people have spoken. We want the same old thing since 1995. So what can I do? What can I do? Yes, let's play a song. Should we play Eddie in the Subtitle? Should we play Cigar? Should we play Blondie? Should we play Surfboard? What do you guys want to play?
You're excited about that Eddie in the Subtitles. Play.
All right.
But don't play like that first. That I don't know. What was that first track off that album? Was good.
I'm gonna play their big hit in case people know. Let's play. This is American Society. I don't wanna live in American Society. This is Eddie in the Subtitles. We'll be right back. So wrap it on up. We'll be right back. Right, and we're back. And this is... No, I'm kidding. Anyways. Emor, a relatively... A lot of momentum in this episode. Any closing words for the listeners?
Closing words. Keep the momentum up. Check out cool new bands. And let me know if you get the reference, the picture of the cool new bands. Yeah.
Hallie Bullet with the rebuttal.
No, I don't have a rebuttal. I have no more cold water to splash on my face.
And we'll see you next week.